Reading with your kids.
Hola, ni hao, konnichiwa, assalamu alaikum, shalom, mahaba, ciao, bonjour, namaste, jumbo. Bienvenidos. Hey, my name is Jet Li, and you are tuned in to Reading with Your Kids. We are coming to you from Reedville, the loveliest neighborhood in all of Boston. Our mission is to help families grow closer through reading. And we do that by introducing you to the coolest authors, the funnest tales, and a whole lot of reading inspiration for the whole family. We hope you'll help spread the word by telling all of your family and friends, your kids' teachers, librarians, principals, random strangers you meet on the street, all about the show and letting them know that they can hear us on the WREB AM-FM 24/7 radio network. And they can find us on the iHeartRadio app, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Good Pods, Podcast Addict, Amazon Music, CastBox, Player FM, Deezer, YouTube. Wherever you find your favorite shows, you can find Reading with Your Kids. With all that being said, let's get this reading party started. This is going to be an absolutely fun show. First up, Matthew Swanson and Robbie Bear are here to celebrate Bin Yokoyama and the Cookie of Destiny. This is a super fun conversation. You're not going to want to miss it. And later in the show, our dean of all things STEM and STEAM, the Admiral of Adventure, Jennifer Swanson, is here to celebrate 3 weeks in the rainforest. This episode of Reading with Your Kids is brought to you by Careful What You Hear, a wonderful middle grade novel by Helen Dunlop Newton. Noah Baker is not an average 13-year-old. He's a mind-reading secret agent. Ever since a mix-up gave him an experimental cochlear implant, he and his partner, Lena, have been going on spying missions for the government. Now they're in for a reward for all of their hard work. Space camp! Their fun threatens to melt away when Noah overhears thoughts revealing a plot to steal secret plans from nearby Redstone Arsenal. Should Noah report what he heard and risk losing a chance to compete in the end-of-camp mission with Lena? Or should he keep quiet and risk bad people winning again? Careful What You Hear is the sequel to Helen's very popular Do You Hear What I Hear? Get your copy today. You and your kids are going to love it. Careful What You Hear by Helen Dunlop Newton. My friends, I have a feeling we're going to have a real fun time today. Our guests are here today to celebrate their new middle grade book. It's called Bin Yokoyama and the Cookie of Destiny. Please welcome first to the show, the author, Matthew Swanson. Matthew, how are you?
I'm very well. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here today.
And I'm kind of out on the high wire right now because I'm going to introduce Matthew's illustrator and wife. And I didn't ask her how she pronounces her last name. We're going to take a chance. Robbie Bear.
Yes, very well done. Very well done. You got all the awards today. Yeah. Thank you very much. Nice to meet you. Thank you for having us. We like to be here and we like to talk about our book.
Excellent. Excellent. Matthew, you were telling me that this is the end of the Bin Yokoyama series.
Well, it is the last commentary we're going to make on Ben's life. Ben will go on and have his own adventures, but this is the seventh book of a series of books called The Cookie Chronicles about a young man named Bin Yokoyama. He starts as a third grader and ends as a fourth grader in the final book, but he is an easily confused young man like I was as a kid, very literal-minded. In every book, he gets a different fortune cookie fortune and gets very confused about what the fortune means. And in misinterpreting its meaning, gets himself into all sorts of
hijinks. Yes. Hijinks and silly situations. Yep.
So in this final book, he goes on a trip of destiny with his family. They are moving across the country to California, and Ben is trying everything he possibly can to get his parents to change their mind, turn around, and go home so he doesn't have to uproot his life. But his best friend, Janet, comes along for the trip, and the two of them steam together. It is, but you know what? We need to put it out there that Janet continues.
She loves Janet so much.
She's a stolen.
Sad if she weren't in this book. So.
Right. Yeah. I won't say any more about what happens, but it's about a road trip. And there's lots of hijinks and lots of confusion, like in any of the Cookie Chronicles books.
Yeah, it sounds like fun. Robin, you're taking charge in this in this interview, letting Matthew know not to give away any spoilers. Is that kind of the way you guys work when you're creating the books?
Well, I'm sure Matthew would say that I take charge all the time. I feel like I gently suggest maybe things. Yeah, well, so I don't know if you, for your listeners, this book is very densely illustrated. There are pictures on every page. The words are integrated with the pictures. Sometimes there's speech bubbles. Sometimes there's, you know, words in different shapes. So, so it is very much a 50-50 words to pictures sort of operation. And we do operate that way in real life. We kind of split things down the middle and do half each. So it's a pretty good representative of our working relationship too.
Our brains work in completely different ways. I am someone who's very goal oriented. I always stay well ahead of deadlines. I like to get my work done and then have my reward. Robbie likes to start her day with an ice cream sundae. And once she's good and happy, then she goes ahead and does her work.
Yes.
Robbie never met a deadline she didn't want to squeeze herself right up against. So we approach things differently.
Yes.
But that's
what makes everything work.
That's right.
Yeah.
If there were two of me, we'd burn to a crisp.
Yes, and if there were two of me, we would have not written our first book yet. So it works out well.
Robbie, as somebody who is just finishing up my corporate taxes before my extension runs out next week, I think I'm probably more like you than
that. Don't even mention taxes because I'm also in charge of those, and I also have not done mine yet. So...
Matthew, I don't know if that's one I split down the middle with Robbie.
I don't want to have anything to do with mathematics or numbers or facts and figures. So even though Robbie's not good at those things either, he's at least willing to do them.
Worse at them. Yeah. So
I just say, yes, please do the taxes whenever you want. Hopefully the IRS will not come get us.
Robbie, it's explaining the book. It's different than a graphic novel and very different than a typical middle grade novel. What went into the decision to kind of create this hybrid?
Well, I'm afraid what went into the decision is that I'm kind of bossy and I like to have my way and I like for everybody to notice my contributions. So, uh-huh. I was trained as a designer. So I started out doing design as well as illustration. So this for me is like a nice, way to combine the two. I do all of the layouts just because it would be really hard to have to have the publisher's designer design the book and then hand it back to me and back and forth. So I do the design and the illustration. And Matthew is a wonderful writer. That's not a critique of the writing,
Bobby.
But Matthew leaves a lot of space in his writing. He does not he doesn't do a lot of describing of spaces or things or places or people.
That's your job, Robbie.
So that's really great because it leaves a lot of room for me to create a space that runs parallel to what Matthew's writing about, but is not like directly illustrative of what he's talking about.
And it's not something we intended when we sat down to make these books, but we hear over and over again from librarians and teachers that these books really appeal and are a great tool for them to hand to a kid who maybe is not interested in reading at all or has only so far been willing to read graphic novels and comics, but needs a little bit more of a handhold in a visual sense to dive into a longer running narrative. So all of these books, you could strip out all of the illustrations and they still read as regular stories. In fact, there's audiobooks that I recorded of all these books. They work fine as just a story, but when Robbie's
nearly as good as they are with the pictures.
Did Robbie mention how much she likes to have her contributions recognized? We've been told that these are books that really appeal to kids who are trying to make that leap into reading longer books. And it is Robbie's contributions that makes them feel comfortable so that they can have the pride of finishing a 300-page book, which is what our books turn into, even though just by word count, they would be much shorter books without the extremely voluminous illustrations provided by my friend here.
I love the act. This is great.
The act? I'm very offended, sir. This is what it's like at dinner every night. We have four children, and so juggling their various personalities requires a great deal of presence and energy.
This is really the only time we get to talk to each other, so it's lovely.
All right.
So I'm curious about the kids. Do they mimic your personality, Matthew, or Robbie, or is it a little bit
of both? Our oldest daughter, Alden,
90% Matthew.
Yeah, but also has some of your best virtues and has escaped a few of my most searing flaws. So she's more me. Our second child, our son
90%
Kato,
Robbie.
He really is. He's got the same like iron, like laser focus on things, the same stubbornness, the same unwillingness to do anything that he deems unnecessary. It's not interesting enough. His brain just wants to fix on problems, just like my friend
third
here.
Third child.
Yes.
Kind of more Matthew, but I'd say 60-40.
Really?
Yeah.
Except he looks exactly like I did when he was his age. My poor father does a double take every time he sees Augie because he thinks it's the second coming of me.
And number four is... Jasper. It was a mystery.
If he's 60-40, he's 60-40 in your direction. Yeah, he's very impish.
Yeah.
He's delightful. No, they're great
delightful.
Kids. We're so lucky.
Saying delightful, Matthew, and she's saying trouble. I don't
know. Well, I am delighted by trouble. If I weren't, I would never have married Robbie.
Well, I love that your third child is named Augie. That was the name of our loyal beagle who left this last year. He was great, but he was also pretty grumpy.
Well, Augie's a very cheerful young man, so that's where the similarities are.
We have a grumpy dog, though.
Yes.
We understand the challenges of a grumpy dog.
Indeed.
Now, Robbie, were you disappointed that this didn't get to be a full-off graphic novel where you had to create thousands of images?
I was not disappointed at all. let me tell you, I think everybody thinks that illustrating is super fun and you sit down at your desk and you're like, yay, this is the best. I sit down at my desk and like steam comes out of my ears and it's very stressful and it's hard work and I got to figure things out. So I'm happy when Matthew writes a little bit of a shorter book. Mm-hmm. And the challenges of a graphic novel are different from what I do. I'm not great at separating things into panels. And I find that very challenging. So the layout of something like that would be even more steam coming out of my ears.
And the density of my writing would not lend itself
to
graphic novels. I'd have to write in a completely different way. And as far as I can tell...
Luckily, I like Matthew's writing very much.
Yeah.
Much better than my, like... I'm not great with a blank slate. So I don't, you know, there's a lot of graphic novelists who do their own writing and do their own illustrations. And I think that's a particular type of creator. I am much better reflecting off of something that somebody else has already done. So this kind of works perfectly for me. I get all of the coverage that a graphic novel illustrator does. Like it's me on every page, mm-hmm. but I don't have to do the hard work of actually like writing every page.
Very briefly, just to let you know where we came from, before we started publishing with big publishing companies making children's books, we spent 10 years self-publishing basically very complicated zines, not complicated, but high production value zines. We had our own publishing company. We made all these books.
Super weird. And they were for adults.
And they were very collaborative. So from the very beginning, what we have loved about this process is coming together around a manuscript, figuring out how to best bring it to life visually. Every single book we made, Robbie reinvented her style. We did all sorts of formats. We really love what happens when images and words come together to unlock each other's possibilities, to contradict each other, to supplement each other, to bring each other to life in different ways. So this is what we've been doing going back 20 years now, and this is just the latest version of it. But it would feel really weird to either one of us to A, have a book with just words, or B, work with someone else. People have asked us if we would work with other creators. And so far, we have decided to be quite loyal to each other.
How did you guys meet? You were collaborating, creating together, and then fell in love, or you just happened to fall in love and just?
Yeah, strangely enough, we fell in love before we even knew we were good at thing that we enjoyed doing together.
We went to college together, and we knew of each other. Yeah. And I remember attending Robbie's senior art show. In which she wrote and illustrated a children's book. It was an oversized children's book. So the pages were like 2-3 by 3 feet. They were huge lithographs. And I remember being very impressed at the time. I also thought she was pretty cute, but I didn't tell anybody.
Well, let me tell you, yeah. My memory of Matthew is that he would sit in the front of the class and raise his hand and want to talk all the time, and I would sit in the back and be like, who's this guy?
Who's that loser?
Be quiet.
I'd never marry him and have four children. And we ran into each other sort of serendipitously a few years after college, and we exchanged email addresses, and we wrote each other emails for like a year. It was like a modern-day pen pal relationship, although nobody writes emails anymore. And we just kind of got to know each other and liked each other and spent time together. And it was only after we'd been together for a couple years that I was writing these weird little stories that amused Robbie, but that she found quite unsatisfying because they were incomplete. And she thought the solution to the stories was not me revising them, but her adding the illustrations necessary to bring them to fruition.
It was 100% correct.
Yes, you were.
Yes.
You were. You were wise. You remain very wise.
I love it. I love it. And boy, we haven't talked a lot about Ben Yokoyama. Who is the inspiration for this character?
In many ways, I am inspiring myself when I write Ben Yokoyama. As I hinted earlier, we have a lot of the same flaws. His literal mindedness is also his charm. So he gets confused about language. And part of what I wanted to do in writing these stories was let kids know, hey, if you're confused about language, if you're confused about the world, if you don't always know what to do, if you make mistakes, that's okay.
Welcome to the club.
Yep. There's ways to get out of these problems. But the other way in which Ben is a lot like me, and this is a recurring theme in my writing, is that I write characters who have a really strong best friend who they need to solve their problems. So Ben is complimented by his friend Janet, who is a little headstrong, a little bossy, a little assertive, and
who inspired Janet?
So this is really an thinly veiled autobiographical accounting of Robbie's and my marriage, in the way that we work together, pitch perfect for the third and fourth grade set. So it really is. Ben and Janet are very different. They go about things in different ways. They communicate and they think in different ways, but together they get to solve problems, and their conversations, I hope readers will find as amusing and joyful and high energy as I do when I sit down to write them. I'm going to miss these characters, and especially Janet, because I love how much they love each other and how they communicate with each other. But there's a lot of us in this series. And I think that's why I'm able to write it and why I was able to carry the series into so many books.
And I would say in this book in particular, so this book, they're on this RV trip across the country. And we actually spent a year traveling across the country in a bus. We refurbished a bus and took our four kids on the road, and we gave away books and free programming to Title I schools all across the country. So we selected one Title I school in each state, and we went to visit, and we did programs, and we gave away books, and it was super awesome. The best year of our lives by far. It was amazing. And that's really what inspired this particular book.
Several of the anecdotes are lifted directly from our own struggles on the journey. Just in case your readers don't know, Title I is a federal designation that indicates a population of students, many of whom are living right at, near, or below the poverty line. So they are communities often where there's not a lot of books, where there's not a lot of budget for author illustrator programming. So one of the things that Robbie and I both grew up in communities and schools with that sort of economic profile, our kids go to schools like that. So we really want to spend our time bringing books and excitement and creativity to populations that would not otherwise have access to it. So that year was called the Busload of Books Tour.
Yes.
And we now run a nonprofit organization called Busload of Books that continues this work throughout the country each year in partnership with Build-A-Bear Foundation and the literacy nonprofit First Book. So this is another big part of what we do. We love making books, but we love using them as a bridge to connect with kids and to help them realize their own potential, their own the way that creativity and reading can unlock opportunities for them.
I love it. I love it. Robbie, Matthew said that some of the incidents in this new book were taken from that bus tour. Can you spoil us and give us, one of your favorite anecdotes?
I will spoil it.
Okay.
All right. Let me tell you.
I know what you're going to say.
The biggest tragedy of this trip for us was that I had been looking forward to going to Crater of Diamonds National Park from the beginning when we started planning the tour. I was like, this is where I want to go. I want to look for diamonds in the dirt. I don't even like diamonds that much, but this was like something that I've wanted.
You like treasure.
I like finding treasure.
Yes.
So I was super excited about it. We, we had a pretty strict itinerary because we had to get from school to school and they were all spread out. So, I had planned it that we were going to get there, on one day and we would have all day sort of to spend digging for diamonds. And then we'd have to leave the next morning to go off to the next school. Something happened.
We were delayed by rain, by children, by dogs.
By very steep mountains, and the bus had a really hard time getting up hills. And so we arrived there at 3:58 p.m.
Which was okay, because it closed at 5.
Because it closed at 5.
Except.
I ran out of the bus, and the door was locked. It closed at 4.
The website was wrong. The website was wrong. Robbie, I thought you were going to say... I thought you were going to say the fact that as we rolled out of town in our bus, the guy building the bus hadn't finished it until 11:59 the day before, and then it rained for the first two weeks.
That's true.
And that's when we discovered all the holes in the roof of the bus.
Holes in the roof of the bus. Heck, that I had to fix.
Heck has no fury like a Robbie dampened by holes in the roof of the bus.
The problem is either fury or despair. And so I think
you choose fury.
I chose despair.
Oh, you did?
I chose despair in my choice of anecdote. You're choosing fury.
Oh, I see. All right.
There was furious about the leaks in the ceiling.
I'll add one.
I don't want to throw anybody under the bus. Oh, as the saying goes.
As I did. I didn't mention it by name. He did a great job with everything else. The other thing I'll mention is that our bus did not have a bathroom because it was just too small for four people, two dogs. It was only a 23-foot school bus, as opposed to the mighty 36-footer. Ben's camper had a bathroom, but it was broken. So it was implausible for the camper not to have a bathroom, but we wanted him to have the same lack of access to facilities for the sake of the storytelling. So, and I could go on and on, but I will stop. I'm sure you have other questions. The similarities are without end.
Robbie, I'm curious. You both seem to love Ben so much, Ben and Janet, so much. Why? Because you seem to be the boss in this situation. Why in the world are we ending it? I mean, I know that there are book series out there that are like 32 editions. And we have 22 episodes of Reading With Your Kids.
That's true. One reason is because it did feel like their story was kind of needed to either, they either needed to get older, right? Or there needed to be some sort of conclusion. So I think their story was sort of, it was either do we move to like middle school now? And that felt a little bit weird because they are very distinctively of their age, I think. Mm-hmm. We wanted them to sort of stay that age. And because I'm bossy.
Yes.
I got tired of drawing classrooms.
Indeed.
It's not fun to draw classrooms.
No.
And so I was...
Says Robbie, in Robbie's opinion.
Yes.
I bet there are people out there who love drawing classrooms.
I wish that I could just hire them to, like, do the classrooms for me. But I cannot.
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
We're both excited about other projects. We have so many ideas. I have four other series lined up in my head. We gave so much of our heart, so much of our time to Ben and Janet. And I think they have... gotten firmly launched. Like I said, they're off adventuring right now without us. And hopefully in the minds of all the kids who read this series. But we are working on slightly more fantastical things right now. Our next book,
which
comes out in April, is a standalone novel called Life on the Moon. And we're very excited about that. It contains moon creatures and moonscapes. And Robbie said, no desks. There's a few desks. There's moon school, but it's only a couple of pages. Yes. And then the rest is just out there with the monsters in the moon. So anyway, we've got other things we need to do. Ben and Janet need to take care of themselves from now on.
All right. Well, I love it. I love it. I really want to let you know that you have an open invitation to come back to celebrate that new book and that new series.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
I'd like to have you back on. Let's tell everybody, first tell everybody where they can go to help out with the your bus and literacy program.
Oh, sure. Busloadofbooks.com. So just all those words together. Busloadofbooks.com will take you to a page where you can learn about our travels. You can see what we're up to now. There's a donate tab. If you want to contribute, we would be delighted to hand out books to kids in underserved communities on your behalf. The only reason we were able to do this is that 1,500 people across the country helped us raise hundreds of thousands of dollars to do this. So we have depended on the generosity of others thus far. Thank you for helping us continue if you are so inclined.
Awesome. And Robbie, where can we go to find out more about Ben Yokoyama and the Cookie of Destiny?
You can go to robbieandmatthew.com. Now, this is where things get complicated. Robbie is spelled R-O-B-B-I without an E. So it's Robbie, R-O-B-B-I, and Matthew, M-A-T-T-H-E-W.com. If you go to Robbie and Matthew and you spell Robbie with an E, that is a Canadian wedding band.
That's not us.
And they aren't interested in talking about our book.
I don't play the guitar the way they do. I can't play your bar mitzvah.
I did not do my research very well when I got our URL. So there you go.
We are also on Instagram and Facebook and YouTube. So if you want it, we do a video every single day in which our nonsense is compressed into 1 minute. So if you want more of this on a daily basis, find us on one of those platforms and we will give you more than you can handle.
You can just look up Robbie and Matthew.
Yes. But again, no E.
No E on Robbie.
No E. No E's.
No E on Matthew either. No, I have an E.
You have,
I have an E. Never mind.
But not on the end.
Not
on the end. That would be weird. I don't want that.
Matthew.
E. All right. Yes.
We've had a great time speaking to the author and illustrator of Ben Yokoyama and the Cookie of Destiny. Our guests have been Matthew Swanson and Robbie Bear. And my friends, this has been a blast. Thanks so much for being on Reading With Your Kids.
You bet.
Thank you so much. We had a great time.
All right. Robbie's going to go boss me around a little bit more now. Bye, everybody.
My friends, I want to let you know that this episode of Reading With Your Kids is brought to you by Once Upon a Dance. Are you worried that your kids are spending too much time on their screens? Once Upon a Dance offers unplugged storytime adventures. Read, move, and imagine together. Created by a dance educator, this award-winning collection blends movement with whimsy. Perfect for families, classrooms, and libraries. You know, my daughter started dancing when she was 2.5, and I absolutely did not need to worry about her spending too much time on her screens because she just loved moving so much. And I know your kids are going to love moving too. Bring stories to life. Visit onceuponadance.com or order Once Upon a Dance at your favorite bookstore. Join us right now from Jacksonville in the Alligator State of Florida. Our guest is returning to Reading With Your Kids to celebrate her new middle grade nonfiction book. It's called 3 Weeks in the Rainforest. Please welcome back to the show the Dean of All Things STEM Esteem, the Admiral of Adventure, I Read It With Your Kids certified great read author, Jennifer Swanson. Hey, Jen, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me back, Jed. I always love to be on Reading With Your Kids. It's such a great podcast.
I am so excited to have you back on. I think that you are possibly the guest who has made the most appearances on the show. It's closer. A couple of others that have contributed a lot to the show. But one of the neat things is you were one of the first really established authors to come on. When we first launched, we had a lot of indie authors, and we still love giving indie authors a voice to share their work. But you were one of those first official, traditionally published authors. And it was so cool. And I remember you shared with me, you submitted Astronaut Aquanaut for our Reading With Your Kids certified read program.
Yeah.
And I gifted a couple of copies to a school here in Boston. And the kids were so excited, especially the kids, the Latino and the Black kids were able to look and say, that guy looks like me. That woman looks like me.
Yeah. And that's so important. And you know what? That's what's in this book too. So, it's 3 weeks in the rainforest. And I always forget the subtitle. It is a rapid inventory in the Amazon. So the cool thing about this is this was a woman led team of scientists and with the Field Museum in Chicago. And the cool thing about that is I grew up in Central Illinois. So as a kid, I went to the Field Museum, right? Uh-huh. So this is like now, all these years later, I get to do a book featuring some of these amazing scientists at one of my favorite museums in the whole world. And, you know, this book is by Charles Bridge Publishing, and I got to work with Alyssa Pusey, who was my editor for one of my previous books, Super Gear, Nanotechnology and Sports Team Up. But the it's a crazy story for how I ended up writing this book. Do you want to hear my little story here?
Absolutely.
Okay. So my youngest daughter was at Northwestern University. That's where she went. And I went to visit her over the summer because she was doing like an internship or whatever. And we had been to Chicago a lot because my husband grew up around there. And she was like, hey, what is that building? And I was like, that is the Field Museum. Because, you know, we took them when they were little. And then as they got to be teenagers and we would go visit, they're like, we don't want to go to the museum. Is, you know, blah. So my daughter's like, I want to go there. I was like, yes, let's go to a museum. So on the second floor of the museum, there is an exhibit for these rapid inventories that this team of scientists does. And you know me, I see science wherever I go. And I started walking through this. There's a movie you watch. And then there's all these amazing pictures of them. And what they do is they go into the field for 3 weeks. And they have biology scientists and they have social scientists. So the biological scientists, they like count like how many animals they see. You know, plants, trees. Basically, they're trying to figure out, is this a good environment that is thriving and there's lots of, you know, plants and animals in this area? And then the social scientists go and talk to the indigenous people that live in these areas and ask them, what would you like done? And then they compile this big, huge report and they make a recommendation to the local governments. But this is not just the team from the Field Museum. There's tons of indigenous scientists and local people that help in all of this, you know, all up and down the government. There's people that help with this. So it's a huge, diverse group of people that do this. And as I was walking through this exhibit, reading all these things, I was like, oh my gosh, this is a book! And it's all here. All I have to do is translate it into the words. And that right there was when I like took the name of the person, of the scientist who was in charge of the team. And you know me, I just emailed her and I was like, I would write, uh-huh. like to write a book about you. And she was like, who are you? Like,
and you said, I'm the dean of all things STEM and STEAM.
That's right. No, but it was really fun. So then I went back again to meet with some of the scientists and kind of interview them because you have to, you know, prepare a proposal to submit to the publishing house. And I actually got a meeting with the PR team, one of the people there. And, you know, they're kind of looking at me and she's like, well, what do you want to do a book about? So if you're not familiar with the Field Museum, they have Sue, which is the most complete Tyrannosaurus Rex ever found. And so everybody does books about Sue. So when I told her it wasn't about Sue, she was like, yay! Like, it's about our scientists. So that's how I ended up writing this book. But it's so amazing, and I'm so honored to have spoken to all of these scientists. They're all diverse. Some of them come from South America and all over the world. And it is just such a great story to tell. Kids will love it.
Awesome. I love being in the rainforest or the right. cloud forest. We were in of course, my first rainforest was down in Puerto Rico, El Yunque, and we visited the rainforest in Panama and Costa Rica. I think we were probably in one in El Salvador, but it wasn't advertised. It was just I'm there with people. I don't know if I told you my Costa Rica story, Jen. I was there and with a guide, but we're on a path and it's worn. And I'm like, I kind of like to be in the jungle, you know, really deep, deep in the jungle. And I think the guide saw that look in my eye and he waited a moment and he said, Señor, pick up that leaf there. Just lift it up. I said, this one. And he says, yes, yes. And I lift it up and he goes, that's a viper. There's lots of them here. And
I, oh, I was gonna say
with you.
Well, yes, exactly. But one of the scientists that I met is Dr. Leslie D'Souza, and she's an ichthyologist, which means she's a fish scientist. And okay. I'm sitting there, you know, I'm talking to her and she's just, you know, telling me, like, tell me what your job is. And she says, well, you know, we go to these places in the Amazon and I just walk into the water. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? Like, you just walk right in. She goes, well, yeah. I said, do you wear waders? She goes, no, because waders, you know, real, if they go up too high, then the water goes in and it can actually pull you down and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, aren't there piranha in some of these? And she goes, oh yeah, you know, you just have to, you know, be aware and you just move them and they'll move away. And I was like, oh, okay. Aren't there anaconda in some of these waters? She goes, yeah, yeah. You just have to not let it get too far up your leg. I was like, what? So then she's like, well, we find fish all over the place. She goes, also, you know, did you know that some fish and some creatures will like make holes in the mud in the side of the river or whatever? And I was like, yeah. She goes, well, we have to find out what those are. So I just stick my hand in the hole. And I'm like, without a glove? And she goes, well, yeah. I was like, oh my gosh. And she's like, is this something you would do? And I was like, not at all. Do not ask me. I don't need to go on the trip with you to write this book. Thank you so much.
But that's why they call her an ichthyologist, because she does all the icky stuff.
Right. I mean, it was just incredible. I'm just looking at, and you know, there's some of the other women that were on the scientist team too. And you know, one of them, she was the herpetologist, so she does like snakes and frogs and all this kind of stuff. So when I was there, she's telling me her story about, you know, that we just pick up the snakes and you always have to grab it from the end. And I was like, sure. And we're at the museum and she goes, well, do you want to go look kind of in the stacks where we have all of our samples? And I was like, sure. So we go back down there. I have never seen so many jars filled with snakes. And these are all the samples that scientists can use in other museums and whatever to study them. But I was like, it's a little gross here for me. And she's like, it's fine. You know, they're all dead. They're not going to do it. And I was like, yeah, I'm good. Can we go look at the turtles or something? Like, but it's just, this is the story of how they are helping to protect, or they make recommendations to protect some of the most biodiverse, you know, environments in the entire world, the Amazon rainforest. And they have been doing this for like 22 years and they have protected hundreds of thousands of miles of the Amazon. And it's just incredible what they've done in conjunction with, of course, all of the indigenous people in the countries that they're in. And this particular book takes place in Colombia. And it's just, it was incredible. There's a whole team that does it. And so I had to interview like, I don't know, 15 different scientists. Like, and it was COVID. So I have like 15 different Zoom calls, right? Then you had to go back and ask them all questions and all this kind of stuff. So there's lots of Zoom calls. But it was fun.
That, right, talking to those scientists, it's right up your alley.
Oh yeah. It was amazing. And I learned so much. And I knew nothing about social science, about how they go in and talk to, because they want to make sure that the indigenous people that are living in the areas are included mm-hmm. in the decisions that are made, because they're the ones that have been living here. They know, like your guide, where all the animals are, and you know, and they know how to use things within the environment, but not deplete the environment, right? So they have all the knowledge of the area. So they're very important to the scientists that are going in there.
Yeah, I love it. I love that we've grown as a culture. We still have a lot more to do. We're not just going in and saying, oh, this is a nice place to build an airport or a shopping mall. And, you know, and being respectful of the people who are living there.
Yeah. Well, and they go in and they have like four different camps. So they pick an area and they have four different, and they move from place to place. But they try to leave as little environmental impact as possible. Right. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they go in on canoes, and you have a satellite phone and that's it. There's no cell phone. There's no Home Depot. They bring in their supplies and then they build these campsites, and then they leave the campsites you know, for the people that live there to use. They can come and get the benches they made for the, you know, the dinner table or whatever. Sometimes they're helicoptered in. It's an unbelievably cool thing to do. So also read the book, but if you're in Chicago, seriously, go visit the Field Museum because you can see the exhibit up there. And that is amazing too.
It must be. Boy, you know, the rainforest, I am so fascinated because there's so much life.
Yes.
You know, I think I've said here on the podcast, me and my kids, when they were young and we would sit underneath this giant tree in our backyard and read books together and then just look up and imagine all the creatures that were calling that tree home.
Right.
But you go to the rainforest and whatever number is in our little tree here in the southwest corner of Boston, just multiply that by like a million and find in the rainforest.
Well, and every time scientists go down there, not necessarily just this group, but there are other scientists that are working there, you know, it's not unusual for them to find a new species that's never been named before, right? Because it depends on where you go and how deep far in that they've been. And, you know, whether they're hiding, like the species are hiding and they just see them. But they count birds and, I mean, everything. And they're just trying to get an idea of how healthy the ecosystem is down there. Mm-hmm. And it's wonderful to say that there's still a lot of health in the Amazon. Mm-hmm. And that hopefully it stays that way, right? Yep.
And we're learning so much about the Amazon. I understand that there are scientists that are using LIDAR and they're finding that in parts of the Amazon that we thought were completely just forest and whatnot, that there were cities, giant cities at one point in history.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many things that you can do. It's so isolated in some areas. It's not in others, but that's why they call it one of the most biodiverse areas on the planet. Mm-hmm. And as long as the technology is used well, now, yes, they've had issues with farming, and, you know, logging trees and all that kind of stuff. But if you can do it in an ethical way for the environment, so you're not hurting the environment, then that's also possible too. And these are some of the things I talked to the indigenous people about and find out how they're living. But they understand not to cut down too many trees, right?
Right.
You know, all that kind of stuff. So they have they have all of the knowledge.
You know, I'm guessing that a family that sits down and reads 3 weeks in the rainforest together, they might be inspired to do their own inventory of their backyard or their neighborhood.
Yeah. And that would be great too. And, you know, maybe you look for the indigenous plants, like how many people have indigenous plants in their backyard as opposed to, you know, the fully manicured lawns like we sometimes have here in Florida. Uh-huh. You know, and maybe add more indigenous plants, or you can count how many like lizards you see or whatever is in your area. Those are all great things to get young minds thinking about being a scientist and being curious about life around them.
Yeah, that curiosity. What do you think is the best way to inspire kids to be more curious and to ask questions?
Be open to them asking the questions, right? I mean, so as a kid, I was that kid. I've told this story a billion times. I started a science club in my garage when I was 7. Back then we didn't watch TV or play video games. We didn't have any of that. I mean, we had TV, but during the day you were not allowed to watch TV. You were outside running around. But that's what it is. And my mom, I probably subjected to my mom every day. Well, what about this? Well, why is this? Blah, blah, blah. You know? And I think as a parent these days, just pay attention to them and listen to them and encourage them. And here's one thing. You don't have to have the answer. Even as teachers, when I was teaching science, I didn't feel like I had to have all the answers. Just help them look for it. And not always by sending them to the internet. Hello, there's this beautiful thing called a library. Right? And kids can go look things up. But encourage their curiosity and ask them questions maybe they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. And have conversations.
Yeah. I think that's a great idea. Jennifer, you know, you did, you have had a love of science, and you did tell us that you started that science club. Do you ever sit back and think, wow, science has been such a part of my life. Where would I be without science?
Yes. And the answer is I have no idea. Because when I do my school presentations and my library presentations, so many people had asked me kind of about my history that I found a picture of me, black and white photo. So that tells you how old I am, older than you think. And I'm like 1.5 or 2. And I'm squatting down on the ground, and we have one of those inflatable pools, you know, that you used to be able to run in and out of, right? And I have 2 balloons, and my mom took a picture of me, and I'm standing there staring at the balloons, and it looks like I'm pushing them down in the water and watching them come back up. I was like 18 months old or 2 years old. And my mom was like, you started doing experiments, if that's what you're going to put a name to them, when you were that little. So I couldn't imagine my life without science. I see it everywhere, you know.
And what a great thing to get our kids excited about, to get them excited about science and discovery and the world that they live in.
Well, and it translates into so many things. I think it's why when I read books, I read mysteries, mm-hmm. right? You know, there's so many things, and you don't have to love science, but you use it every day, mm-hmm. you know? And it's just, I think it's something that also brings people together. Or it should, anyway, because the more different opinions you have with science, the better the science is.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I love this. And I am wanting to go to the rainforest.
Anywhere. There you go. There you go. Stay on the path.
In the path. And the neat thing is every time I visited the rainforest, I got soaked.
It rainforest. I mean, it kind of makes sense. Yeah, exactly.
And it really, if you're listening out there and you have an opportunity, you're in a place like Puerto Rico, you're in a place like Colombia or Costa Rica, take advantage, go to the rainforest and stay in the path, but also just experience it. We have a picture of me in Panama, and this ginormous blue butterfly landed on my shoulder, and I was wearing a blue jacket, and along with my blue eyes, it's just this great, great picture of this moment. And the butterfly looked like a dinosaur; it was so big.
Wow, it's incredible, right? I mean, I'm forever floored by science. I learn new things all the time. And I love getting to meet scientists who do such cool things in the world. And engineers and everybody, you know. Mm-hmm. That's what gets me excited about it.
And, you know, a great way for kids to meet scientists and engineers is to listen to Solve It for Kids.
Yeah, the Solve It for Kids podcast, which I started with you. You were my first podcast partner, and we have interviewed over, 220, I think, scientists. We have from black hole. We talk about black holes to how to make toilet paper, right?
I missed that one. I remember how to fix a helicopter with Dippity Doo.
Oh yeah, that was Wendy Lawrence, an astronaut
And we interviewed a Lego artist and
Dr. Brian Helmuth, was our first, who's with at Nahant Marine Research Lab, and he is an aquanaut. Mm-hmm. It was in my astronaut aquanaut book, and also in my Lost Forest book. Yep. Who dove on the underwater forest.
Lives here in the Greater Boston area.
Yeah, yeah. We did.
I get to speak to my first astronaut,
Katie Coleman.
Yes.
Yep. She's also on the show. She's fantastic. And we interviewed Fabien Cousteau, remember?
We did.
Yeah. That was awesome.
And he told me about his mentor, the person he thinks is a superstar, Dr. Sylvia Earle.
Oh yeah. And absolutely. She is a superstar.
On Reading with Your Kids.
Yep. Yep. She is a superstar. Yeah.
She was really wonderful to speak to.
Yeah.
Well, we should tell everybody where they can go to find out more about 3 weeks in the rainforest and also more about you and Solve It for Kids.
Yes. So 3 weeks in the rainforest is published by Charles Bridge Publishing. So you can go to their website and take a look at it. Hopefully it'll end up being on the Field Museum in Chicago's website. And if you want to find more about me, my website for my books is jenniferswansonbooks.com. And you can take a look at that. And check out Solve It for Kids, which is solveitforkidspodcast.com. And take a listen to some of our episodes with, oh my gosh, some of our amazing guests.
Awesome. We've had a great time speaking to our dean of all things STEM and STEAM. She is the author of 3 Weeks in the Rainforest. Our guest has been Jennifer Swanson. Jen, thanks so much for being back on Reading with Your Kids.
Thanks for having me, Jen. It's always a great pleasure.
Wow, that really was a fun episode. Thanks for hanging out with us here at Reading with Your Kids. If this episode made you smile, and how could you not smile at Matthew and Robbie? I mean, they were just great. Jennifer Swanson was great, as always. I mean, if this didn't make you smile, call your doctor immediately. But if it did make you smile or gave you something to think about, please share a link to the show with someone you love. Maybe post about it on your socials. We'd also be so grateful if you could leave us a 5-star review. And of course, don't forget to subscribe to the show so you never miss an episode. I am so very grateful to the people who made this episode so amazing, starting with our guest, Robbie Bear and Matthew Swanson. Please be sure to check out Ben Yokoyama and the Cookie of Destiny. And of course, want to thank our Dean of All Things STEM and STEAM, the Admiral of Adventure, my buddy, Jennifer Swanson. Be sure to check out 3 Weeks in the Rainforest. Also want to thank our sponsors, Helen Dunlop Newton. Please be sure to check out her book, Be Careful What You Hear. And, of course, we love the folks over at Once Upon a Dance. Visit their website, onceuponadance.com. I want to thank my team, Fatima Khan, Chris Doherty. I want to thank my beautiful wife for all the support she gives me. Most of all, we all want to thank you. You are amazing, and you're making the world a kinder, more empathetic, more loving place every time you read with your kids. Till next time, go make some reading magic happen.
Other high with a spark in our hearts, we reach for the sky. Hand in hand, we're stronger, breaking every chain. Every smile, every laugh makes us dance in the rain. We're a tapestry of colors, woven so divine. When we stand up for each other, together we shine. Turn gray, we find our light, chase the shadows away. Every voice is a treasure, a melody so pure. In this dance of acceptance, we find the cure. Lifting spirits higher, feeling so alive. In a world that embraces, we thrive and we strive.
In this beautiful chaos, let your colors unfold. In the warmth of our hearts, we're brave and bold. So lift your chin up, let the world see your light. Together we shine, making every moment bright. Together we shine, making every moment bright. Together we shine, like stars in the night. Illuminate the darkness, oh so bright. We stand for our brothers, we stand for our friends. Together we rise, love knows no ends. Let's vibe to the rhythm, everyone join in. With open arms, let the party begin. Intertwine in this beautiful world, together we shine.